how to use this series, and why you would want to. In this video series, we'll be talking about skills that are directly connected to the moments that matter scenarios, and they are good leadership skills and just basic human skills to have in general. Take what works for you and leave the rest. These are the skills to fill your toolbox with. Over time, you may master them. Today, we invite you to explore and learn more. When you're ready, you can start to practice. As you go through, keep these 5 tips in mind. Context is everything. As a manager, you have a unique perspective. As a company, you have a unique culture. As a team, you have a unique employee makeup. Your work sites are in specific, unique geographic regions. When thinking about how to respond in moments that matter, keep these dynamics at heart and in your mind. Your identities matter, and so do the identities of your employees. All of us carry social identities. The histories and power dynamics connected to those identities show up in every interaction we have, whether we are conscious of it or not. Understanding those identities gives us more choice in how to interpret and respond to what's going on. Power, power, power. Attend to the power you have, the power dynamics around you, and what you're powerless to do anything about, in equal measure. No conversation has to be final. So many of us hesitate in moments that matter because we are looking for the perfect words, the compelling statistic, the right approach. None of those things exist. What if you knew a started conversation was a mere opening, that other opportunities to connect could come, that you could clarify and demonstrate commitment over time? Would it take some pressure off? Never underestimate how saying, "Let's pause here, think it over, and come back together again next week," might create the exact space you both need. Be true to you. People can generally sense when you're being authentic and when you're not. Adapt anything and everything here to your leadership style, your communication type, your cultural way of being. Be you.
Advocacy. Let's talk about advocacy. Despite the images of an advocate you might have in your mind, you don't need a megaphone or a stage to be an advocate. Advocacy just means you aren't waiting for an opportunity to make a difference to fall into your lap. You're going after it. Being an advocate involves 5 things. Number 1. Getting involved and believing you can make a difference. Be open to everyone's opinions, even if they are different from your own. Listen and reflect. Be open about your own experiences too. You'd be surprised how much being willing to share your own experiences will help other people feel seen. That doesn't mean you're always making things about you. This isn't about ego. It's about having skin in the game and being willing to be vulnerable and honest. Trust the process. Taking risks is scary for everyone, and it's okay to be uncomfortable or confused. You're in the middle of the work. Keep trying, be open to feedback, and keep improving. Number 2. Recognizing when attitudes or ways of thinking about certain groups or types of people seep into decisions being made or the way people are being treated. That's called bias. It's all around us, but we often fail to notice it. If you pay attention, you'll probably notice the ways women who assert themselves are judged as aggressive or, well, as you know what. That same assertiveness from a guy is seen as just strength. Same way of acting, different reaction. That's bias. In this example, gender bias specifically. If you can start to see it, you can start to address it. Number 3. Building confidence to overcome barriers to change. Behavior change can be awkward, so be patient if someone makes a mistake. And that includes being patient with yourself. One critical approach is what we talk about as calling in, rather than calling out mistakes. So that might sound like pulling someone aside privately later and being like, "Hey, that comment you made before? I want to understand. Can you explain what you meant by that?" And then having a conversation about it rather than shaming them in the moment. Number 4. Talking to people. It's the only way you're really going to learn and better understand other people's experiences. Create safe spaces for others to speak. You can't just say you have an open door and expect people to come to you with their stuff. You have to work at showing them that you really can be trusted and mean it when you say that they can talk to you. And that doesn't just mean that they can bring you their hard stuff, their complaints and requests. It means they can show you who they are, and they won't do it if you're not doing it too. If you want people to come to you, you have to be willing to go to them. And sorry to make things a little complicated, but keep in mind that there's a difference between curiosity and invasiveness, and that line will look different for everyone. Same goes for asking questions to help you learn across lines of difference. You can and should talk to people to really get to know their experiences from their point of view, but that can't be the only way you educate yourself. It's not their responsibility to teach you what it's like to be a woman in your work environment, or a black person in this country, or whatever the case may be. Start by educating yourself. And number five, being committed. Making change to improve your workplace for yourself and your team is an ongoing collective effort. There's a lot you can't control, but you have the most control over your own actions, so start there. Model the positive behaviors that you wish to see in others. Practice inside and outside the workplace.
Awareness. High turnover isn't good for you, your team, or your business. And as the saying goes, employees don't quit companies, they quit their manager. So, how do you make sure you're not that leader? Here are some tips to help. Specifically, to be the kind of self-aware leader people want to work for, try out these five behaviors. Be accountable, know and care about the people you work with. Follow through on your values. If you say you're going to do something, do it. If someone offers you good feedback, make change. When you mess up, admit it, apologize, and do better next time. Accountable leaders are trustworthy leaders. Be humble. Know what power you have and use it for good. Know what power you don't have and be honest about that. Admit what you don't know. Be teachable. Learn and grow, particularly about things that make you uncomfortable. Figure out how to communicate so that your intentions match your impact. Build cultural awareness. If you want your employees to feel valued, then you've got to make sure to value the cultures your team members come from. That doesn't mean you have to be an expert. Asking genuine questions and being open to learn are critical skills to use as a leader when you're trying to build cultural awareness. As a supervisor, you're also responsible for building a team culture. Work towards one where people can truly be themselves and where they feel valued for their skills, trusted to make meaningful decisions, and safe to take responsible risks and even make mistakes sometimes. Be persistent. On things that truly matter, keep going and don't give up, even and perhaps especially when it gets hard. Get the support you need to stay in it for the long haul. Be reflective. Take regular inventory. Build time into your schedule to look at your leadership behaviors and how they impact people. Be honest about what you're doing well. Be brave enough to look at what needs change and change it. Do it alone and with those you trust who can hold you accountable. The good news is that you don't have to be perfect, and you're absolutely allowed to have bad days. The aware leader keeps trying, and that's more than enough. Care. Life is messy and often challenging. People go through stuff, and because workplaces are full of people, this means all that mess will inevitably show up at work sometimes. Compassion, empathy, concern, whatever you call it. The well-being of your employees has a lot to do with whether or not they feel cared about and cared for. Some care can come from good communication or saying the right things. Most of the time, though, people feel cared about, or not, based on actions. So let's get into what a caring supervisor does. Support. When someone comes to you with a struggle, listen and validate. Make space. Reflect back with care. For example, I hear you. There's no shame in seeking support. We all need it sometimes. It can be helpful to get things off your chest. Or maybe, it sounds like you're overwhelmed by the conditions in your home country and the potential danger to your family there. When you say it feels impossible to be away from them right now, I believe you. How about? I'm not gay, so I don't know what it's like to come out at work. I see you trying to figure it out, and I want to be a safe space as you do. I'll be here no matter what, okay? Set boundaries and use resources and referrals. Your job isn't trauma processing. You're not an addiction recovery specialist or a grief counselor. Some dynamics that are not your responsibility will show up at work. Care includes recognizing boundaries, knowing your limits, and staying in your lane. There are ways to be available and caring and direct people to help beyond you. This might sound like, I'm not a therapist, but I care about you. I can listen right now, and I'll also share some resources and referrals that can help in a situation like this. Or maybe it's, that behavior is causing problems at work. It also harms you. I don't support either of those things. It's gotta stop. Most importantly, I want you to get help. Are you open to seeing a professional for support? Part of caring for your employees is knowing them, the aids available to support them, and making those connections. What resources does your company offer? What's in the community that you can refer to with confidence? It's not enough to know about them. Tell people about them. Post them in the break room. Have them scrolling on a screen in the reception area. Get them to your people. Respect people's privacy. While offering care, be sure to communicate and safeguard confidentiality. Unless company policy dictates otherwise, if someone discloses something to you, ensure it stays with you and say that it will. Be adaptable. Sometimes people bring struggles to us that we can do something about. In addition to care, this will likely require adaptability too. Whether it's a mom whose kid's drop-off schedule makes her 15 minutes late every day, getting the first woman on your team adequate restroom access, changing uniform protocols for comfort and productivity, or temporarily shifting responsibilities, so you can provide on-the-job learning opportunities so that an employee can advance. Adaptability is a leadership strength that shows care to your employees. Adapt when necessary, where you can. It's tangible support, and it will be seen and felt. Care for yourself, too. You didn't think we'd close out before talking about self-care, did you? The work world can be brutal. Competing demands, conflicting loyalties, stress, changing metrics. Technology escalates everything's pace. You care about your people, and sometimes they let you down, or you unintentionally let them down. Burnout is real, so what can you do? Mental and emotional well-being are like physical well-being. They need ongoing attention and maintenance. Take that time out before you hit a crisis point. Take your needs seriously. Meet them. Recognize when it's time for help and get it. Remember that the care you give yourself grants permission to your team to do the same. Everyone deserves care, including you.
Microaggressions. You've been there. Someone makes a comment. Everyone senses how wrong it is, maybe even the person who mistakenly said it, or no one seems to pick up on it except the person who was the target of the remark. Either way, it's real awkward and uncomfortable. But before anyone can think of what to say, you get called back to work and the moment has passed. We've all been there. Problem is, when those moments happen and pass by without being challenged, they become common and accepted parts of the culture. As a supervisor, you are responsible for making sure that doesn't happen. Now, you might be thinking, I can't possibly respond to everything. I need to pick my battles. This is true, but it is important that we try to prevent any harm from being done. Ignoring or excusing hurtful words and behaviors with responses like, boys will be boys, they didn't mean it, or don't be so sensitive, can be seen as agreement, which adds insult to injury. Everyone deserves better. So what do you do when those awkward and harmful comments or actions, which we are calling microaggressions, show up? Two things. Pay attention and assess the situation and challenge the harmful behavior. First, pay attention and assess the situation. Get clear on what happened. What was actually said or done? What's not okay about it? Reflect on what your first instinct is. Is it to confront it, ignore or excuse it, or do you feel stuck? What's causing you to respond this way? Think about what the impact is on the people involved. How are they responding? Are there power differentials influencing how you are thinking of responding? Consider whether addressing it publicly or privately, and whether directly or indirectly would be more beneficial. Decide who you need to speak with to stop harm and show care. And second, challenge the harmful behavior. Choose words and actions that connect and don't add to the conflict, but help people grow. This might sound like, "Hey man, you might not know this, but it's not okay to constantly refer to your direct reports as young lady. I know your heart is in the right place, but it can be demeaning. Just use their names instead. Don't shame, blame, and call people out. Instead, let them know you're a safe place to process, for example." I get that language is changing all the time, and it can be hard to keep up. I'm here if you ever want to check in about what's okay and what's not. We can put heads together on it. I need that accountability too. Some other things to think about when it comes to addressing harmful behavior. Decide whether to do in private or publicly. There's a time and place for both approaches. In private, people can save face. In public, everybody learns. It's on you to know which one is better in the moment. Decide whether to do it directly or indirectly. Sometimes you go to the source, but other times you can create new norms or formalize a policy to address it again. As a leader, you know what's best given your team dynamics. Decide whether to do it immediately or after a pause. It can be too egregious to let it go in the moment. A pause can bring necessary perspective and give you the space to strategize. Or maybe you do a little of both. Stop it in the moment briefly and then follow up for a longer opportunity to unpack what happened later. Every situation is different. Do your best.
Communication. So much of what makes a good leader comes down to communication. So, what does it take to communicate well? When you think about it, communication is about how we take things in and how we put things out. Let's start with how we take things in. Listening. Good listeners take time to direct their attention where it needs to go. Put down a phone. Look up from the clipboard. Slow down. Make eye contact. Connect. Easier said than done, for sure. You can't stop the line mid-production or ignore customers who need to be served. But when you have the opportunity, remember that a little bit can go a long way. Good listeners take the human being in front of them seriously and stay humble about dynamics and differences of culture, identity, and power. For example, this could sound like, "I want to acknowledge that I'm your boss," and it can be hard to say these things not only to a boss, but to a boss who comes from a different culture than you. So if at any time you feel like I'm not understanding, I want to give you permission to tell me so I can try new ways to connect. Good listeners invite dialogue, perspective, and examples from experience. They hear words, and they also work to understand the meaning of the words. They suspend judgment long enough to consider things from another's perspective. Good listening notices body language and the energy in a conversation, will honor a pause, and can stay in discomfort for the sake of the dialogue and relationship. You don't have to solve everyone's every problem. You don't have to dedicate huge chunks of time to talking when you have very real pressures and priorities waiting for you. And this work is by no means yours alone. The communication you engage in is just one piece of the puzzle, but small actions, simple choices in the way you engage and respond can make a big difference. Good listeners acknowledge what they've heard in three ways. Number one, affirmation. Number two, asking relevant follow-up or clarifying questions. And number three, repeating back. Let's start with affirmations. One, affirming that you've heard someone builds trust. It can sound like any of the following. Thank you for sharing this with me. I hear you and I believe you. I'm sitting with what you've just said. What I'm hearing is that you've been through a lot. Two, questions are powerful in letting someone know they've been heard. They can also open the next layer of connection and information. Is what's needed a follow-up or clarifying question? Maybe both. A relevant follow-up question sounds like,
I'm hearing that our overtime policy makes it harder for you and your family. Can you tell me more about how that impacts you? A relevant clarifying question sounds like, does this opportunity not interest you at all, or would you consider it if we're structured differently? For instance, if the hours were more flexible or the pay was higher? 3. Acknowledgement can also be repeating back what's been said to ensure it's coming through. That's listening. Now, what about how you put things out there? Speaking. Clear, consistent, and compassionate communication comes down to this. Say what you mean. Be genuine, precise, and honest. Mean what you say? Don't say one thing and do another. Be accountable and trustworthy. Make sure your words and actions match, but don't say it in a mean way. Say things in a caring way so that people will hear you. For example, I care. I believe you about your experience and want to be part of changing this dynamic on our team. What do you need right now? If someone tells you that a word or phrase you routinely use is offensive, be teachable and humble enough to adapt your language to something more respectful. If you want more on that, Catalyst can help. Again, body language matters. You can have all the right words, but those words won't have meaning if your arms are crossed and closed. Open up and make contact in ways that are natural to you. Know that the more you put yourself out there, the more people will respond in kind. Break the ice. Share a story of your own that's relevant. If you want to hear more about communication, like giving and receiving positive and critical feedback, hang out here. If not, remember, no conversation has to be final. We learn good communication through practice, practice, practice. Keep trying. Giving and receiving feedback. Giving feedback isn't easy, especially not when it's critical. Who wants to potentially hurt feelings? Who wants to be uncomfortable? Not many of us. It gets trickier if we have identity differences with history and power dynamics we aren't used to facing. What if I'm a middle-aged man with a younger direct report, who is a woman, and she interprets my negative feedback as sexism? Or what if I'm a Black woman new in my position, and I'm afraid that my critical feedback toward my direct reports will further their stereotypes of me? These are legitimate concerns. But if we don't work through those concerns and give our direct reports needed feedback, we rob them of the opportunity to grow and ourselves of the chance to build relationships with our employees. Yes, it's a struggle, and we've got to get skilled at giving critical feedback. Here are some tips for managers. Acknowledge that it's hard. Assure the person that, even though it's hard to hear, critical feedback is actually an investment and an opportunity. And that's the goal here, your goal, for this person to do better. Name what's not working, be precise, and explain why. Then, get equally specific about what the right direction would look like and create space for processing. Final tip, follow up. If someone continues the problematic thing, hold them accountable. If they change and do better, reward them. What does positive feedback look like? Giving positive feedback doesn't always come naturally either. Recognizing the good stuff can be awkward, too. What if you come across as cringy or don't use the right words? What if you compliment a specific employee, sparking jealousy and competition? That last concern is easy to solve. Create a culture of recognition within your team by making a habit of lifting up good work. You reward colleagues who do the same. That'll cut down on exclusion and competition. Also, make your positive feedback concrete. Point out good behavior with laser focus. Be specific. For example, when you tell me that sexual harassment is happening, you break through stigma and silencing. That puts the problem on my radar so I can stop it. You're creating a more transparent workplace. It builds trust. Thank you. If you want to know whether your positive feedback is landing the way you intend, just ask. This might sound like, it's important that when I recognize your good work, it comes across as just that. It doesn't have to be right now, but I'm open to hearing how I am doing. Then, prepare to receive the feedback. Receiving feedback, annual reviews, being summoned to the boss office, Does the idea of it make you sweat and expect the worst? You're not alone. What if a direct report conjures the courage to tell you something difficult? What if you get painful feedback because it's coming through second or third hand? Receiving feedback is learning about our impact. It might not come when or how we want it, but it usually comes with some kernel of truth or opportunity for reflection. It's important to note that mean-spiritedness, tearing down, and bullying aren't feedback. You don't have to endure abuse ever. Interrupt and stop it if or when it happens. But if someone comes to you with a genuine desire to reflect back to you, here are some suggestions. Whether receiving feedback from above or from your direct reports, get as centered as possible. Be mindful of power dynamics, especially if you are the supervisor. Acknowledge the risk the person is taking and the investment the person is making. Sort through what's true, maybe with another colleague or friend. If you're feeling defensive, that's a good sign. The feedback has some accuracy. Integrate what's true and practice, practice, practice. If the feedback is valuable, tell the person. If a team leader can role model receiving feedback well, it goes a long way in building a culture of trustworthiness and growth at work. It starts with you.